You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 21st of July 2012 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you live from Studio One here at Midori House on Monocle 24 with Tyler Brulé and Emma Nelson.
Coming up on today's programme, we'll be finding out what's been flying off the shelves in Page and Blackmore Books of Nelson, New Zealand.
We have a book that's in the New Zealand Awards for the most popular book of the year picked by the public, and that is New Zealand Native Trees.
And we'll also be reviewing some Balearic tracks with DJ, producer and record label owner Christopher Tubbs.
And we'll be working our way through the pages of a selection of magazines with Josh Fanning, editor and publisher of Adelaide-based Collect magazine.
Lots of yummy things to look forward to right here on The Review, live on Monocle 24. And good afternoon from Studio One here at Midori House with Tyler Brulé and Emma Nelson. Hello.
Hello.
You're very smiley.
Very smiley. Just back from, we've been sharing holiday, we've been sharing Bardi photographs.
We have. that would be B-A-D-I, yes, as opposed to B-W-D-Y.
Yes, no, that was we had an interview with Fernando Pacheco from Zurich. He was doing a Friday night for the Monocle Daily last night, and he said, "I love a baddie."
Yes.
And I thought, well, would we all love a baddie on a Friday night?
he was quite a hit in his orange Orlebar brown trunks at Badi Utoke early this week. I'm sure he's cutting a dash there right now.
I hope he is. He was heading off for some rösti last time I heard.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time. I mean, he's going to be a bit of a porky Brazilian by the time he gets back.
For those of us who hadn't had the privilege of getting a glimpse of Fernando, he is a svelte, lean whippet of a man.
Yes.
And I think he's going to come back with a tiny little pot belly.
Yeah, well, he likes, they went off to one of the sort of, you know, Bierhalle kind of, you know, traditional Swiss joints the other evening. And I think it's all been sort of slightly downhill from there on the culinary front.
Oh, good Lord. Because it's comfort food in Switzerland,
it
isn't
is.
It? You don't find sort of refinement. Yes, you do find refinement, but within a certain parameter of
you just immediately veer towards, you know, shredded potatoes done in butter, don't you?
Pig and cheese. Who can resist pig and cheese on a buffet?
And Austria was good to you?
It was pig and cheese.
Right. With sunshine.
A little bit of sunshine. I had that lovely alpine unpredictability to it. So you'd wake up in freezing cold weather, and then before you knew it, it was 26 sunny, and you were in thick sweaters and cross.
Right. That's all right.
It's what you go for.
Yeah, exactly. When you'd have it every day in London. But we are in Studio One, and just beyond these thick walls, it is sunny, which is fantastic. And it looks like the weather is going to creep above 23 or 24 degrees. So summer will officially be here. What are we on? Is it the 19th, 20th today?
We're looking at the latter half of July before we're getting three full days of warmth together.
Which is good.
I don't believe it's going to happen. I think they're doing it and then just to disappoint us.
Aside from looking after your little tyke on your sun lounger in Austria, did you tuck into any good media? Were you listening to anything great? Were there any box sets that you were watching in the evening?
No, I wasn't. It was one of those things that you, once the little tyke was asleep, it was an opportunity to sit on a balcony and try and read a book and try and have a glass of wine.
I was going to try to consume some, a nice Grünerfeldliner.
A lot of Grünerfeldliner. A fatal Grünerfeldliner was the most commonly said phrase throughout the whole week. And just to enjoy a little bit of peace and sort of cleansing. I was still appalled by the standard of Austrian news. It is just terrible. The construction of it, the television news.
You mean just watching ORF?
Just watching, watching Zeitenbild. I mean,
right.
You do want to. I know where the offices are. I hope they can hear that I know where the offices are, because it has been a long time since I've actually shouted at a television.
Really?
Television station.
Do you think just because it was summer season, or it would matter if you're watching in November?
I think it is generally quite shocking.
Right.
One thing I do enjoy, though, and I'm not, and it's a purely tourist thing, is that they have this wonderful little hour-long spiel between 7 and 8 in the morning on the television, where they have webcams of but of mountains and ski resorts.
Right, and you can look at the various what's happening at a base station.
Oh, it's fabulous. Right. It's addictive.
You just think, just do that 24 hours a day.
Oh,
rather
just
than...
happily do that. It's like crack. I could sit there and go, oh my God.
ORF does have a very good, I think it's FM Fear.
Yes,
which
that's
is
very good.
They have a very good radio station, which I think used to be, was formerly Radio Blue Danube, which is great.
Yes.
But maybe they should stick to radio.
Maybe they should stick to radio. I didn't have the chance to listen to radio, and I was too busy jiggling at the young tyke and watching Alpine music on the television. It was lovely. It's sort of it watching something perpetually bland and repetition, you know, and repetitive.
Mm.
I found incredibly soothing, having had so much, you know, media. Then just to watch an Alpine, just to watch a mountain for about 5 minutes on a television screen. Maybe there's something wrong with my old mind.
Should we talk books after this?
Yes, please.
We should. It's just 2008. If you're listening in Hamamatsu, how about that?
That's rather impressive, Mr. Brillet.
It's 1308 in Copenhagen, 1208 here in London. You are listening to The Review with Tyler Brillet and Emma Nelson. We're back after this.
No mundo todo, essa é a Mônaco 24.
Haule la alam, hana Mônaco, arva washrin.
En todo el mundo, esto es Mônaco 24.
London, New York, Hong Kong e Tokyo. Ez a Mônaco 24.
Από όλο τον κόσμο, αυτό είναι το Mônaco 24.
Varje rundt, det här är Mônaco 24.
Überall auf der Welt, das ist Mônaco 24.
Der coolste Mônaco 24.
Around the world, this is Mônaco 24.
And we do go around the world. We start today by spinning the globe and paying a visit to some of the world's best independent bookshops.
First up, we are going to go to Toronto. Did you know we're opening an office in Toronto?
I had heard.
Yes, we're opening an office. Actually, not far from Type Books. Two main streets further north. Anyway, they're on at 883 Queen Street West in Toronto.
Do you need a bag? Are you okay?
No,
I'm fine. Okay, thanks.
I'm Jo Saul. I'm co-owner of Type Books. So Type Books is an independent bookstore in Toronto. We have two locations. We have one down in Trinity Bellwoods, which is a cool kind of arty, designy community. We have another one up in Forest Hill Village in Toronto, which is a really bookish kind of neighborhood too. We have been here on Queen West. This is our first store, and we've been here just over six years, so that's pretty exciting. We try to cater a lot to the communities we're in. So for example, the Queen West store, it really caters to an art and design clientele. We have a big art and design section. We also have a big literary fiction section, and we have a big kids section as well. We really like to think of ourselves as a kind of community hub, which is, I think, what an independent bookstore has to do in order to succeed. Queen West, in this store specifically, we have a lot of readings, we have a lot of book launches, we have a lot of local authors come in and out of these doors, and we try and support them as much as humanly possible. So we love having them here, we love launching their books and having readings. We also have a gallery in the basement, and so there are a lot of local artists, and we try and feature artists from within a 10-block radius, and in 6 years we've been able to do that, more or less, not exclusively, of course, but that's another way we kind of bring the community in. One of our very local authors, she lives half a block away, she was here at our grand opening 6 years ago. She read at our five-year birthday as well, and she's a good friend to the store. Her name's Katrina Onstad, and this is her latest novel, Everybody Has Everything, and I read it last week when I was on holiday, and I loved it. What I loved most about it, I think, is that it takes place, again, basically within 10 blocks of the store. It really celebrates this particular neighborhood. A couple who are childless have friends who are parents who are in an accident. I'm not giving anything away. It starts right at the beginning, and they're basically left with their 4-year-old son. So the story is wonderful. The writing is wonderful. And again, the geography is so palpable. Like, you can really understand and feel where she is. So we're selling it extremely well, not surprisingly, given that she's our neighbor and people come in and ask for it all the time.
And that was Jo Saul from Type Books in Toronto. So you're well acquainted with Type Books.
I am very well acquainted with Type Books.
She seemed to be incredibly engaged with her local audience, though.
Yeah.
She was absolutely...
And it's a very particular part of Toronto. It's, you know, Queen Street, you know, for many years has been had an interesting retail scene. It's quite non-chain, so it does make sense that they're there. And Toronto, you know, for quite a while had a number of, let's say, I wouldn't even call them smaller chains, but, you know, outlets or let's say owners that have maybe two or three shops in the city, and a lot of those have now gone under. Canada, like many other places, has seen the arrival of the big box bookstore. So in Canada, that is mostly under the Indigo brand, which is, has really seen off a lot of the smaller operators. But the good thing is, Type Books, they've got a loyal following, and it's always quite buzzy in there. So
how is it that, do you think that they've managed to sustain the loyal following?
It's customer service, and you just you see the tension when you go into the store. Is that it's not the bestsellers or the books they want to promote have not been selected at head office. You can tell the people who are working in the shops are the ones that are selecting them. So, should we head off to Zurich?
Yes, please.
Because we haven't had enough Zurich this week.
We haven't. I want another slice, please.
Earlier in the week, it was on Wednesday, we had one of the digital editors from Hoc Parterre. Now, Hoc Parterre is an architecture and design magazine. Absolutely fantastic. And one of these titles that could probably only exist in Switzerland.
It's absolutely gorgeous to look at and very, I think we've had it on the review before.
Absolutely.
Incredibly trade.
Yes. And it's they've also got their own bookstore, Hoc Parterre Bucher, which is on Gasometerstrasse. I mean, only in Switzerland could you have a street called Gasometer Street. Anyway, let's have a listen.
My name is Hans-Peter Vogt. I work for Hoc Parterre Bucher in Zurich. It's a bookshop for architecture books. We opened 2007, 5 years ago, and we are specialized for architecture bookshops. We have a little graphic design, a lot of furniture design, and a lot of international magazines in architecture, graphic, furniture, and all kind of this. There is a very interesting book about the Greek architect Aris Konstantinidis. It's out of print and we find the last 20 copies and we still have of this book. And it's a wonderful book about Greece architect in the 40, 50 and 60, and he makes a lot for the Greek architecture. It's from the Mondadori Group from Alecta. It's the publisher, and it's just in Italian. There is an interesting book, and one of the first book about Peter Merkley. It's Swiss Architects. It's a book from the exhibition in a little gallery in Tokyo. Our customers are more architecture and peoples. They are interesting for architecture books and wonderful books with pictures.
And that was Hans-Peter Vogt, owner of Hoc Parterre Bucher in Zurich. It really felt like a Saturday afternoon in Zurich right there. You wouldn't want to speak too loud in that shop, would
no.
you?
No, I love
And you
the...
wouldn't want to rush Hans-Peter either.
I don't think you could if you tried.
But I do feel it's a shop that you could quite easily walk out without even knowing that you're spending 1,800 Swiss francs on rare editions.
of the Konstantinidis 20 edition out of print architecture book. He didn't tell us how many editions that he still had left that hadn't been shifted. But I absolutely got the impression that his voice was like Hoc Parterre magazine.
Absolutely.
Subdued, quite deep, thoughtful. No rush there.
No.
No one in a hurry there. Delightful. Last but not least, let's head to Page and Blackmore Books of Nelson in New Zealand.
I'm Peter Rigg. I'm part owner of a bookshop, independent bookshop in Nelson, New Zealand. I enjoy having a bookshop because it's the only way I can afford my reading habit. We sell fiction and non-fiction books. We have a strong magazine base as well. As we're in a provincial capital, we have to cater for all sorts. So we stay away from stationery, but everything to do with reading we sell there. This one right between us here, Anthony Beevor's Second World War, is very popular. There's a book on New Zealand top architect, Ian Atherfield.
which is selling very well. We are having a visiting author from the UK, Chris Cleave, and he's coming down to promote his book Gold, which we have got in the bin by the front door, and that's selling well. There's a book by New Zealand author Emily Perkins, The Forest, which is also selling well. So we've got a good mixture of stuff. We've got this long table along here, which has got all non-fiction titles on it, and that's probably our most popular browsed table. In our shop window, we have we've been running a local competition for knitted flowers to promote a knitted flower book, and we currently have in there all the entrants from the competition. We were surprised at how many we had there. We've just picked the winner today. And on the other side, we have a book that's in the New Zealand Awards for the most popular book of the year, picked by the public, and that is New Zealand Native Trees, published by our local Nelson publisher, Craig Potten Publishing.
Great. Let's go.
Thank you.
I don't think people's love of books has changed much. The biggest concern for us is internet booksellers. People come in and say, I suppose e-books are hurting, and we say, no, not really. I still think people prefer paper books. It's the internet booksellers, because being here in New Zealand, we often find that we just can't get books for the price, match the price that internet booksellers can overseas.
And that was Peter Rigg, co-owner of Page and Blackmore Books at 254 Trafalgar Street in Nelson in New Zealand. I think Peter raised one of the dirty little secrets of the bookshop, which is we don't do stationery.
Right.
And I always find that the stationery, I always feel guilty when I look at stationery, but when you go to lots of bookshops, one of the little things that I do enjoy is buying stationery in bookshops.
Right, you mean in the form of a birthday card?
You need a birthday card, or actually you can get lovely notebooks or cards or greetings cards. And I always think that a bookshop should have stationery in it, because in many ways it inspires one to write.
Right.
Or if one, so you just go back with books that you never fill.
Mm.
Just beautiful things. But I loved the fact that he was a purist. He's like, we don't do stationery.
Yeah, we don't do wrapping paper. We don't any of it.
We're too brainy for stationery.
I also like the other dirty little secret as well, that he has a bookstore because he wants to finance his habit.
I love that.
Which is great.
Delightful man.
We are going to go away for a very short break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to DJ and music producer Christopher Tubbs here on The Review.
The Globalist bids goodnight to America, good morning to Europe, and good afternoon to Asia with 2 hours of analysis, paper reviews, and a run through the topical stories shaping the world wherever you are.
The issue of reform and again how society forms itself post this crisis is playing a leading role.
Tune in every weekday at 6 a.m. London time.
The Olympics are coming to London and to Monocle 24. From the 27th of July and throughout the Games, we'll be going faster, higher and stronger, bringing some of the icons of the Games into Midori House, as well as taking Midori House out on the road with a series of special shows from across the city. Monocle 24, keeping a sporting eye and an ear on the Olympics.
What Cannes is to film and Venice to architecture, the city of Arles is to photography. Our Monocle film crew headed down to the south of France for the opening week of the Rencontre d'Arles, the world's leading photography festival.
Photographers love a group hug. There's a lot of talk of apertures and shutter speeds and white balance in bars and parties across town. Everyone's at it, shooting everything in sight. Everyone's got their eye on everything and how everyone else might be framing it for a shot. It's a life through a lens in Arles.
Monocle Films. Focus on photography on monocle.com.
Mm-hmm. 12:21 here in London, and you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Emma Nelson, and Tyler Brulé.
It's now time for a weekly music review. Our guest this week is Christopher Tubbs, international DJ, producer, record label owner, and now
eater of muesli.
Absolutely,
as we established a moment ago.
Drinker of flat whites while we're doing the sound check. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It seems like you're having a bit of an Antipodean overload.
Well, no, I think we were having a bit of a Swiss overload. It was a bit of a...
We started off on an Alpine direction, yeah, and then we veered off, and then we have headed down under.
Yeah, so Emma was on holiday in Austria last week.
Tyler was in Zurich.
Working.
I see.
In our Swiss office. Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I think the last time I talked to you guys was from New Zealand, actually.
Yes, you were down the line.
I was. And it's very nice to be here in person in the studio.
So tell us, why are you in London?
I live here.
Oh, there you go. That would make sense. That wasn't in the briefing notes. It isn't, is it? No, it's not.
It is. The co-founder of London-based.
Yeah, label. Well, it doesn't mean he lives here.
Okay.
Welcome home.
Thank you very much. No, I do live here, but at this time of year, it's all a bit around and about.
I was going to say, because you specialise in new disco, and we're going to talk a little bit more about new disco and the Balearic sound.
Yes.
What are you still doing? Because you're in mid-season in Ibiza at the moment.
Why are you in London?
Yes,
again?
Why are you here? Oh, shouldn't you be out somewhere?
Because real life impacts, unfortunately, and as much as I'd love to be out in Ibiza all the time, it's just not a reality. London is the epicentre of dance music, and although it kind of summer arm is operating independently out there in the Balearic Isles, it's not, you've got to be here, really.
Unless you're DJing. I was about to say, because all the DJs are all out there at the moment, and that's it. They all decamp, hire houses, and that's it until September.
A few of them do. There's either the very upper echelon, that kind of top 5%, and there's also the residents, people who went out there on a wing and a prayer, who originally probably were flyering and doing PR for big clubs and have kind of needled their way into, you know, early doors residencies and things like that. So it's both ends of the spectrum, the big guys and the guys giving it a shot.
You sound like a bit of a rave monkey there for a second.
Me?
Yeah, you.
There was a past life of a certain period of time. We also have our name.
I got a feeling there as well.
Yeah, that was a very long time ago.
But
my one regret was never making it to Ibiza. And that was, what I have noticed, though, now is that it seems to be a generational thing, that the music that people were listening to 20 years ago is still there. And the DJs are still there. And you just wonder how cyclical this whole thing has been. Because we're going to listen to a bit of your music in a moment. And when I was listening to it this morning, I just thought, my goodness, 15 years ago, I probably would have been listening to the same kind of stuff. How has it evolved? Or has it just remained static?
No, well, it's funny because we're having this conversation at that complete 360 evolution point. So the music you were probably dancing to in the mid-90s?
I'm not telling you.
Early...
I'm not telling you.
Whenever that was, the music you were dancing to then is probably exactly, in terms of sonics and the, you know, the instruments used, the feel of it, very much what people are dancing to now. I mean, there was a huge period in Ibiza where it was very kind of clicky, very minimal techno and house music, which really required a certain state of mind, should I say, to really get into. And I think now it's reverted back to music, which is far more musical and far more euphoric just by itself.
But obviously you're talking about the same kind of music, but the way that it's being produced is different. There's a higher level of technology now. And this is when new disco comes
well,
in.
Well, no, this is the interesting thing, actually.
I'm getting it so wrong today, aren't I?
No. I can understand why you're coming to these conclusions. But it is, in fact, people are not only reverting to a particular sound, which is that kind of very drum machine-y, original acid house sound that people might recognize from the late 80s and early 90s, the original sound of house music. But also they are going back and using the original machines as well, the original synthesizers. And there's a huge secondhand market at the moment, a ferocious secondhand market for vintage synths, and also people who build their own synths. So all the kind of all the software that people have been using in... you know, to produce music in the last 10 years, is although it's very, very practical and very transportable, you can make music on a laptop, all of these kinds of things, people prefer to use hardware because synthesizers and drum machines have their own personality. You can only ever do one take that sounds like that take once, if you know what I mean. Whilst on a computer, you can replicate that sound again and again and again.
That's why we like live radio, isn't it?
Mm.
Don't encourage her though, because next thing there's going to be a cottage industry of Emma and her other half building synthesizers.
Dodgy synths in the back room.
Or maybe yard sales. Why don't we put our listeners out of suspense? You've got Stars and Bars lined up by Stars and Bars. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them first, and we can reflect on the sound afterwards. Who are they?
Well, this is a group from Scandinavia from Sweden, who released this record on a very small local label called Moonshine Records in 1981. And it is the sonic personification of everything that is right and beautiful about the original Balearic sound. It's very uplifting. It's slightly kind of on the edge. It's a little bit left field. In fact, that's European soul slow-mo disco music. And it's just it's a beautiful thing, and it's sunshine.
And that was Stars and Bars by Stars and Bars.
Yeah.
It was sunny.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just really reflects kind of that original Balearic spirit. And the original Balearic spirit, just to explain to you, was this idea of extreme eclecticism across different styles of music. And it was pioneered by some very early Ibiza DJs, a guy called DJ Pippi and Alfredo, and they would play everything from the latest sort of Chicago house music to U2, The Streets Have No Name, and James Brown, and very early hip hop, all in one set, as long as it had this sort of indefinable feeling that made you feel a certain way and just sounded good in the heat and in the sunshine.
So where do we hear that music now?
Well, there are certain DJs who very much still fly that flag, and there are people like DJ Harvey, who's an Englishman living in America. There's Rub and Tug from New York.
She's booking her ticket now.
Must look up. Remind yourself. Must look up.
It's interesting because that original spirit, although the music has changed, has kind of come full circle again in Ibiza. There's a new sense of eclecticism. Whilst it's been ruled by house and techno for maybe even 20 years, just recently there's been a bit of a sea change. And last week I went in on a little bit of Mark Ronson and Zane Lowe's tour around Mallorca and Ibiza, sort of swam in their champagne slipstream for a few days. And
It's a rough life.
And discovered that, you know, that there's still very much a kind of sound or elements of certain genres, be it, you know, dubstep, which is just inexplicably popular at the moment, or be it house music, or be it rock, whatever it is, there are tracks within all of those genres that for some reason resonate when put together in a certain way. And that's very much the spirit of Ibiza, of Balearic music.
Sometimes I think maybe music like that has evolved, probably for worse rather than for better, into the more all-encompassing sort of chill-out music genre.
Yes.
And is this sort of move now to go back to the originals a sort of a reaction to the fact that every single record shop and every single playlist in the world had a cartoon of a woman in a bikini for 20 years and it was, you know, volume
like
10, 11, 12, 13.
Jason Brooks? Is that what you're saying?
How much did this sort of whole chill out genre influence music, and then how in your opinion well or badly did it fare?
I don't think what's going on now is a reaction to that. I think just the nature of the more accessible end of what people perceive as Balearic music, which is kind of, you know, the sound of water lapping up on a white sand beach and seagulls in the background and sort of like a gentle 4/4 beat, you know, that unfortunately just is so easily compilable, and it's easy listening in the literal sense, but it's actually got nothing to do with Balearic music. You know, Balearic music can be punishing techno, can be West Coast 60s rock and roll. It can be anything if it has a certain mood.
Right. Well, should we move on to the next one?
I introduced the last song.
Okay. Shall I introduce the next one then?
Why not?
Tell us, Christopher, about K Kill Me by Golden, by The Golden Filter. That's what we're going to hear now.
Golden Filter is a New York new disco outfit. And this is a remix by one of the poster boys of contemporary arty electronic music, John Talbot's from Barcelona. And it's just this beautiful, slightly melancholic, but at the same time, euphoric record. It's brilliant.
That took me some places. That was Kill Me by The Golden Filter. Very evocative.
Absolutely. Where did it take you?
It took me to, various places in various corners of W1, circa 1991, maybe 92, in terms of sound.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. Because I heard it and I thought, this is a guy called Gerald all over again.
Absolutely.
It's astonishing that this is considered to be fresh and new. I just find that very funny. Or maybe we're just all getting very old.
I think that is the unfortunate reality.
That's the problem, isn't it? But for one glorious moment, we will have our moment of being in fashion for approximately 35 seconds again. But you said that you obviously you're a record producer and also you own your own label, but you buy a lot of vinyl as well.
I do. And that's a whole another conversation, really. I do buy a lot of digital, and obviously everything I get sent by record labels is digital these days, which is very sad and anticlimactic, which means that 90% of it never gets listened to.
Yeah.
Because there's something very uninspiring about the ping of an email opposed to the...
And clicking on a link.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's instantly forgettable, because you don't forget a record that's sitting in your room because it's talking, it's screaming at you to be listened to. But you can always go away and you just think, okay, I'll go. The terrible thing about an email is you can always go back to it.
One of the great things I heard the other day was talking about, and I'm not sure if I was discussing this with Rob, anyway, someone on our culture team, but there was just this brilliant, brilliant quote, and someone was talking about going from the physical to going to digital. And they said, moving from being, print edition to then being, weekly as a digital edition. They said, is the media equivalent of going into witness protection? And I thought, it's absolutely spot on.
Because you never get the direct experience, or you're just cushioned.
Yeah, it's just kind of gone. As you said, you can have these, things can sort of ping in your inbox, but, there's always going to be something else that will take priority, probably.
Mm. Yeah.
And when you're choosing your records, how do you avoid that? Or do you just regret the fact that you never listen to what you really want to be listening to?
Well, I think in terms of being promoed records, I get about 400 a week or something ridiculous like that. So I literally just look for names that I recognize. I just do a search in my email. It's so uninspiring. I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but I still prefer shopping in record shops. The actual physical tactile nature of being handed a 12-inch. It's just got so much more potent, and there's always that anticipation and excitement for me that I had when I was 18, being handed a record and putting a needle on it.
Well, let's play your sorry.
No, it's fine.
We've done it again, haven't we?
You take it. Run with it. Yeah, absolutely.
I shall run with this. Julio Bashmore, Troglodyte, an amazing title.
Is it Julio or who's it? Julio.
Julio.
Well, it's actually Matt Walker from Bristol.
Even better.
But let's go for Julio.
Julio. Cave women. Neanderthal. Troglodyte. Let's take the average caveman at home,
listening to his stereo. And that was Troglodytes by Julio Bashmore, also known as who, Christopher?
Matt Walker from Bristol.
Brilliant.
Who can I ask that question? Who would be listening to this? Because I couldn't quite enjoy that. I don't know why. I was just getting into the melody, and then
the vocal came.
Then
in
the vocal
and you were
came
not
in
so
and
sure.
Just made me quite cross.
I think. I think.
No disrespect to Mr. Walker, obviously, but it's just not my cup of tea.
I think it's. When you listen to house records, some house records at home, and you hear the vocals, and you're like, oh my god, this is so banal. This is just meaningless drivel. And then for some reason you're in a club and you hear it over a loud sound system and your critical faculties are somewhat sort of I don't know, not necessarily narrowed by your evening, but just you just don't care as much. You're looking for big picture messages. And I think that record's interesting because it's slightly skew, if slightly odd. Mm. It's exactly that. So you just don't expect that vocal to be coming in at that time. And what does it all mean? Probably not very much, but it's
I suppose it's because it has a definite subject matter to it, whereas it's supposed to, you know, the general, like you say, the banalities that you normally have to deal with when you're listening to when you're listening to house music. But no, I sort of half enjoyed that. I kind of understood what they were going from, but then thought, and where would you be listening to that? Would you be listening to it in a bar
or early hours in a club? I'd say.
Yeah. Okay. Did you enjoy that, Mr. Brunet?
It was fine. There was other activity going on. I'm too upset by the construction in Studio 2 next door.
Look away.
Okay, I won't look. For our listeners, with all of this rain we've had in London, there's been some flooding in our building. Anyway, hopefully.
And Tyler has a view of the problem.
I certainly do. Christopher Tubbs, thanks very much. Have a great summer.
Thank you.
You're sticking around in the epicenter of dance music for the rest of the summer.
I am around. Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Well, we shall have you back in soon, please.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Christopher Tubbs, DJ, music producer, and independent record label owner.
You're listening to The Review. It's just 12:41 here in London. We're going away for a short break. When we come back, it's time for our magazine review.
Premiering on Monocle.com, a film about the city we feel ranks number one for quality of life. Monocle's annual survey goes beyond the basic economic and social aspects of a city, identifying often overlooked factors that can bring happiness and ease to everyday life. And for the second time running, climbing back up to the number one spot, it's Zurich.
On a sunny early summer's day in Zurich, a handful of its residents have made their way to Badi Enge, one of several bathing houses situated along the waterfront, offering decks for sunbathing, bars, and even saunas. The scene is especially notable for taking place minutes from downtown, and it's what sets Zurich immediately apart. This is a city with abundant and interconnected green space, cut through by rivers leading to its lake. All of it set up to be enjoyed by the population.
You can watch this film, plus our top 25 most livable city countdown, on monocle.com.
Wherever you're going this summer, and whether it's for work or play, let Monocle's editors be your travel companions. We've just refreshed and revised our team's guides to the world's top business cities and resorts, so you can have our 25-25 travel guide series in the palm of your hand with the Monocle app, available from iTunes, or download free guides from monocle.com. From São Paulo to New York, Capri to St. Bart's, we can show you where to long lunch or go for your morning run. Just head to the iTunes App Store and download the Monocle app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And welcome back. I haven't even turned the page. I thought you were doing it, Emma, but maybe not.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it is actually you. It is me. Anyway, you're listening to The Review. It is Saturday. We're in London. Sun is out. Emma Nelson is here, as am I, Tyler Brûlé. Each week on The Review, we cast our eye on the magazine industry to unearth new titles, emerging trends, and applaud examples of promising publishing. Sometimes we also take issue with it as well. Today, we're joined by Josh Fanning, editor and publisher of Adelaide-based Collect magazine. Some of our listeners will also know that you can pick it up in our shops around the world as well. It's doing a brisk trade. He also runs the Magazine Gallery, which is visual music to my ears, a design studio by day and a gallery by night, stalking the world's best magazines. Mr. Fanning, welcome.
Thank you, Tyler.
We've got a variety of things. So you've got quite a big stack in front of you, and I think we've probably thrown you a couple of curveballs, but I can see that you're putting some of them to the side because you want to talk about the new issue of Kinfolk first.
That's correct. Right. Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, when yesterday you invited me on the show and I just quickly touched on some magazines that
make it sound like we just found you like at one of those Aussie backpacker hostels and dragged you in, but it wasn't like that.
Not entirely. And Kinfolk is just one of those terrific magazines at the moment. Volume 4, it's one of the mags that sits on our shelf at Magazine Gallery, and we knew nothing about before we opened the store. We've only been open, you know, 3 months or so. and people are drawn to it. They're just magnetized to it instantly.
What is it that draws you to it? Because I'm drawn to it, and you take issue. I'll take gentle issue with it in a moment. But there is something initially incredibly satisfying about it.
Yeah, it has to be the cover, because obviously that's the first thing that's pulling you in. The previous one, to my liking, was amazing, and by this miracle of coincidence, we stocked next to Kinfolk Diner Journal. And Diner Journal is the publication of Marlowe and Sons Diner in Brooklyn. And so that cover of Kinfolk that was next to it was actually featuring, you know, the maitre d' or the head waitress from Marlowe and Sons. And so they sort of sat there next to each other and they'd cut the top of her face off. And just her smile and her honesty, I think, really, we sold 20 in sort of a week. So it was amazing. And this, similarly, the new issue of Kinfolk is...
Josh, for people who aren't familiar with Kinfolk, what is it graphically about the cover? Just describe the cover and why you think it has impact. Why does it draw you in?
I think, well, first of all, there's no cover lines. It's straying away from, you know, your usual or at least your staid sort of standard for magazines. It's just a simple masthead that's completely unaffected by the photo. So it's sort of a two-thirds photo, one-third masthead, and it's simple. And I think it speaks to people that are, you know, looking for a design aesthetic and, you know, with a simple sort of tagline, a guide for small gatherings. I think that's interesting. People don't think about it.
And their choice of cover as well. You mentioned the waitress from the last issue. Tell us about this one, which is irrepressibly fresh.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, great. It's, you know, a couple, a woman laughing, a man turning away, laughing on a beach somewhere in America. But, you know, when I looked at it more and I sort of looked at the geometrics of it and I start to appreciate the photography and how it's been set up and it's a little bit actually like collect covers and, you know, one central image, a strong, appealing sort of photo and dynamic, and yeah, it works beautifully.
Do you think this type of publishing, there's a stillness, there's this, you know, this certain element of calm almost. Does it define a certain moment in time? Because, you know, there's so many titles which are on mat. A lot of people have been exploring, of course, different trim sizes, you know, purely for standout, as you said. Graphically, Kinfolk and many others have gone away from cover lines to pull people in, thinking that maybe the format can draw them in. Does that mark, are we in the middle of it right now, do you think? Are we coming to, you know, to the end of it? I sort of wonder, because every time I go into a bookstore, I'm always amazed by the fact that, you know, yeah, there are more interesting titles of small scale still coming out.
Yeah, well, I think certainly, you know, there's, to my mind, there's at least two sort of schools in public. Well, there's obviously many more, but the two that I'm most interested in, you know, there might be a Fantastic Man, a Apartamento sort of school, which Plant Journal, that new magazine fits into as well. And then there's the other side, which I would put sort of Kinfolk into, with a more quiet, you know, flashless photography sort of world. But I do think that publishing has to be different to other medias in terms of the internet and this constant sort of updating. So, yeah, I think the calmness that's happening in Kinfolk and other magazines, like even Collect, I think we move towards a really simple and standard way. We don't want to trick our readers. We just want the readers to read, you know, top to bottom, left to right. Mm. Here's a pull quote. Here's a caption for your photo. You know, you get something out of it. We're not trying to, you know, reinvent design through our magazine. So I think, yeah, it's an honesty that people are drawn to.
This brings me to my one criticism of Kinfolk, and I'd quite like to be shot down in flames for saying it, but it is beautiful. One gets the impression that you're taken to a place where leisure time never ends, and this is lovely. But I sometimes find it slightly jarring that it might in fact be a triumph of format over everything else. And when you go to their website and you look at what their manifesto is, I think I read somewhere that there is a recommendation that you, and I kid you not, that you actually have a blanket when you're reading Kinfolk. And a little bit of me just thought, hang on a moment, I will read my magazine in my own city. You know, I will wear a bikini if I want to read Kinfolk. I don't care. I will dress up as a bear if I want to wear Kinfolk. And I found it slightly, just ever so slightly jarring, okay, that it was too perfect and too cosy.
Or too dictatorial.
Yes, too prescriptive.
Well, I mean, certainly there's other another magazine with kinfolk called Smith Journal, which is Frankie Press's new man's magazine. And that's definitely this super form and very controlled and I think not very masculine as well, you know, for a man's mag. Not that there, you know, there's one type of way to be a man, but...
Don't start a fight with people in Queensland now.
But kinfolk, I'd argue, it falls into that category, that it is controlled relaxation.
Yeah, I get that.
Which I'm not...
This is what you should eat. This is how you should eat. And these are the people who you should eat with.
This is what enjoyment looks like, ladies and gentlemen. Right. And I found that a little bit much. Whereas looking, having a sort of little glance at Collect, you seem to be... You'd sort of... You're a little bit softer around the edges, would argue.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing we strive for with Collect is just to be honest and reflect what's there. So, you know, I think Apartamento does do that very well. We don't have anything, I think, in terms of being common with them with photographs or anything like that. But, yeah, I do believe we just want to tell good stories and let the people that are the stories do that.
It's interesting the role that a title like Kinfolk takes, and Apartamento in another way as well, because you know Kinfolk, you know, if you rewind 20 years ago, the start of Martha Stewart Living, and as that was hitting stride, that you know, of course, in a much more commercial format, and you know, very American, sort of you know, A4 in size, and nothing like it. But you know, at that same time, there was something. Yeah, at the start of the 90s, you wanted to be in the pages. You wanted to be going to, you know, the man on the side of the road who is selling, you know, corn, and then you wanted to be part of that party, you know, that party that Martha Stewart, you know, was hosting with her friends. And in many ways, you know, Kinfolk wants to invite you into the big dinner party in Brooklyn, and it's chronicling, I think, many of the same things. You know, interestingly enough,
it's a crystallization,
albeit in a much less. You know, commercial format. You don't have advertisement for Aunt Jemima pancake syrup and other things in there. At least not yet, anyway.
No.
What do you have next?
Well, there was The Weekender that came through.
Do you know The Weekender?
I don't, and I can't read it because
right,
I'm not
German.
Sure.
It's German, right.
I don't know about
it. But it is wonderful, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to say, The Weekender is, I think they split their editorial between Berlin and Cologne, and just the name of the title. And again, it is of that family. It's Matt Paperstock. It's
very Apartamento.
I can see I can see a white tablecloth on under a tree
and a beautiful grass lawn. But it's
there's
but I think
from
because
Kinfolk
it's German,
having you know setting up next door, having a sort of a rival dinner party.
But it's a little bit more relaxed.
Yes,
and I think actually you know the Germans they do that very well. And you sense that liberalism of Berlin. It's not quite as prescriptive and maybe as uptight as you know as I think some of the other titles that we were talking about and yeah, you also sort of feel that you could probably get, you know, a flash of flesh, which is, of course, interesting enough. I'm not sure you've had a lot of that in Austria when you were there. That's one thing.
A little bit much.
So what it always does surprise
one
you.
Thing that's a letdown, like, isn't it? I'm so sorry.
Well, it depends who it is. But when we were at the bathing club as well, and suddenly you just see this you know, bronzed, you know, old woman, you know, with, you know, kind of nice, you know, nice body, but a bit of a saggy boobs. And,
yes.
You know, and, you know, there she is, you know, in all her glory, like, you know, splashing into the lake, which
is delightful and free and lovely. And we had the same thing in a spa, but we had possibly a more provincial body was to be witnessed that was maybe more pig and cheese dependent and enjoyed beer. And
right,
one of those,
fine.
Perfect. But and okay, absolutely. You appreciate the liberal qualities of it. Now I can hear there
you
is a rustling, ladies.
This is I want
this
to,
is Tyler's wonderful
this is my moment.
Moment.
This is my big
what
audio
you got in your hand?
I have a copy of Esquire. Esquire very early days. I can't even tell you what year it is because we're gonna open up the package. But I was at Tsutaya in Tokyo a couple of weeks ago, and that's one of the great things about this store is that you can go and buy the current issue of Esquire, and you can go and buy all the vintage ones side by side, without having
amazing.
You know, you don't have to go into a vintage shop. So great cover. They have Esky, the Esquire character. He's playing tennis, and he's just in a wonderful whites, and it's sitting in this wonderful oval frame, and there's this flash of gold, and there's something so incredibly modern about this cover. Just the size of it, it's you know, it's beyond.
It's almost
A3, and I'm just going to say this is what year are we looking at? It's entire contents copyright 1935.
How amazing.
Which is, you know, there's something so incredibly modern. Articles by Ernest Hemingway, Vincent Sheehan, satire by Walter Brooks, you know, department's editors, you know, Burton Rasko, all of these incredible, you know, Meyer Levine, all of these just these great names from publishing. and just inside, you know, just so in curious, I like so much fashion, and a sort of, I don't know, a wonderful lightness to it as well, which is great. I will pass this around, and you just wonder how they, you know, how they assembled magazines like this back in the day. When, you know, we have enough trouble getting things out sometimes with all of the digital technology, and it's just so exquisitely typeset, and the quality of it. And, you know, here we're looking at a relic which is, you know, coming on for a century old as well.
It's 75 years old. Yes, it's astonishing. What's
and the weight of it.
Josh, tell us about some of the headlines that you're spotting in there. So what are they writing about in July 1935? We have a summer issue, clearly, because we have tennis clearly. Playing on the front.
Yes, he's very
So we have
well
a spirit
dressed.
Of holiday.
Yes, I'm drawn immediately just to the illustrations, and that's just absolute beautiful geometric style. You know, the chiseled shoulder and you know, the high, the pulled up socks and trousers. But you know, that one of the titles we're looking at here is "The Sound and the Fury," with subtitles "All the World is Sad and Ugly." You did pick Omaha after all.
Brilliant.
And yeah, I've never actually, you know, look, here's "The President Vanquishes" by Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's phenomenal. And the advertising, that's what I love about vintage magazines, is it's as much a part of the content as anything.
And I think also just the sheer amount of copy that you had in ads, you know, even going back to the 1970s as well, that it wasn't so much about the image, but there really was a sell on page, and the sell went beyond just having one clever tagline.
They really tried to draw,
and the lifestyle that you would, you know, gain if you sampled this product, if you slathered it on your body, if you poured it on the rocks, and I think that's great. We've really lost that.
We have. Just show this. Explain a little bit that picture that you're looking at now, which is, this is a glimpse of flesh. This is a flash of flesh 1935 style.
Very much.
This is something
some
you always get in Monocle,
buttocks,
don't you? You get for the summer issue.
Yeah.
I'd heard that there was always in a little flash of flesh. But what tell us about the picture that we're looking at.
It could be an Australian even. You know, no, it's a lovely watercolour with some very fine brushwork indeed, and some very attractive looking young ladies who are admiring a brown, maybe Swedish, maybe Australian, I don't know, but a handsome man. It says, "Enemies of Man number 16, the bellboy of the beaches."
And brilliant.
There's some rather, you know, unhappy spectators that you can see.
So, because they're all fawning around the cabana
the
boy.
That I was in a few weeks ago.
Or lifeguard.
We
have a couple of other magazines, but I think we're going to have to just maybe rush through the pile very quickly.
I wanted to, I mean, one of them, The Gourmand, I think, is launched very recently. Particularly, I was just thinking how many food magazines there are. And it really seems to me like a zeitgeist at the moment. And I know designers that are looking at food operations and starting pop-up restaurants and things like that. So, yeah, there's just a very interesting direction there,
and it's curious as well because there aren't any big commercial food magazines. I mean, I can say in your home country in Australia, there's Gourmet Traveller, which I still like as a commercial title, you know, which comes out, you know, six or ten times a year, however frequent it is. But I would say in the UK market, we don't have anything of, you know, there's Jamie's magazine, and that does one thing, but it's built around, you know, one character. And it's interesting how there's this complete surge in very small niche specialty titles.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there, small and niche and specialty titles. And I'm quite, you know, I'm so impressed by the level of specificity when it comes to designing a magazine. I mean, The Gourmand seems to be tailored for I don't know who, unless you're bilingual and live in a Paris flat. And that's the only one that you should be living in.
Absolutely. We're going to have to leave it there because it is almost lunchtime, so we should venture beyond these studio walls.
Food magazines and head out.
Josh Fanning, editor and founder of Collect. Great seeing you, and I know you're going to be around for the rest of the week. I'm sure people will be hearing a little bit more of you. That brings us to the end of our Saturday Review. For now, it's goodbye from all of us here at Midori House. Today's show is produced by Alexander Mills, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco in Zurich, and our studio manager is Sam Impey.
Next up, it's time for The Curator, where you can catch our pick of the week's best Monocle 24 stories, guests and features. And don't forget to tune in to the Monocle Weekly, which will be on air on Sunday at midday London time.
You have been listening to The Review with me, Tyler Brulé, and Emma Nelson. Coming up in about 1 minute and 5 seconds time, Christian Yeo is here with the headlines. But for now, it's goodbye and have a very good weekend.
Bye-bye.